Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
You're listening to The 30 Podcast. Here's your host, Jazz Kang.
All right, Sixers fans, things are pretty good when it comes to your team. Now won six in a row. This time ended up beating the lowly Detroit Pistons 113-93. Some good, some bad, lots to discuss. Before we do that, don't forget, subscribe to the Liberty Ballers Podcast Network. You can catch us wherever you get your fix. Catch us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, you name it, we are there. And of course, check us out online at libertyballers.com. Joining me for this episode of 30, like he usually does, Mr. Jackson Frank Jackson. Things have been pretty damn good for the Sixers lately. How has it been for you the last couple of weeks covering this team? And what did you think about tonight's win overall, although you're playing the worst team in the Eastern Conference?
Yeah, they've looked pretty good. I wouldn't say I think maybe the 6-game winning streak belies some of how they've looked, but wins are wins, especially for a team that wasn't really able to gain any traction the first third of the year. These are good wins, and I thought tonight was kind of more of the same. They had some really good 4 to 5 minute stretches, a bunch of them, honestly. And then somewhere you could tell maybe they weren't quite as focused as they needed to be. I don't like to use focus as a cop-out, but they just didn't feel crisp at times. But overall, the defense is really, really good. The defense is playing excellent basketball after kind of that weird 3-game losing streak where they weren't really engaged on that end. They've been excellent again. So yeah, and then obviously the offense has been pretty good, and it helps when Tobias Harris, especially the last few games, is scoring the ball incredibly efficiently, and it kind of helps offset, Harden and Embiid not necessarily being their full efficient selves the last couple of games. It also, still been wins. So it's nice when your stars don't have to be, at their pinnacle, and you can still win games fairly comfortably.
Yeah, it's interesting because looking at this, like Tobias Harris, like you mentioned, had that great game last time out when he lit up the Raptors, and then coming into this one, ended up starting off 3 for 3, finished 6 of 9 overall, 17 points, 4 rebounds, a lot more effective on the catch and shoot threes. He talked about this as well with the media, that he's been looking to change his game and kind of change his mindset. And we've said this 1,000 times, Jackson, since we started talking about the Sixers and covering the team together, that he's never going to be worth $38, $39 million. But if he's doing what he's doing now, especially given Maxey's absence, when you watch the way he's been playing, and we've seen Tobias obviously play up close and personal for a long time. He's been around the league for 10 plus years. But when you look at the way he plays, right, sometimes he's at his best when he's able to bully a smaller defender, go to the block maybe, get a quick turnaround jumper over the defender. Number two, now we're starting to see him kind of adapt his game into, hey, I'm not necessarily going to catch the ball in a position that I'm going to have to take a couple of dribbles. I'm not going to have to create for anybody else. Likely when I'm getting the second, third, fourth pass of the sequence. When you look at what he's been able to do and his catch and shoot ability, how much of a boon do you think this is for the Sixers, and really for how good he's been playing this last little while? Do you think it's sustainable?
Yeah, I think for the most part sustainable. I don't expect him to be at 42.8% from three. They don't expect him to be that, but I think 39-40 is completely attainable. We've seen stretches of that from him during his Sixers tenure. And what I think is most impressive is, we talked a lot about the adaptation of his game last year post-Harden trade. We talked about it over the offseason about him needing to sustain that. What's been impressive to me is they had this run, right? We watched them have this run where Harris was the main guy. Maxey was injured and Embiid missed some time. Harden was still out with a foot thing. And as soon as, Harden and Embiid came back, Harris kind of like seamlessly slipped back into this smaller role, right, where he's taking a lot more spot up threes. He's still getting to kind of do his bully ball stuff on the block a little bit, and I think that's been important for the offense to maintain that rhythm for him, to kind of give him some of those touches still. But by and large, I think the process is sustainable. Like I said, I don't think he's going to shoot 43% from three, because that's not who he's been, in his decade-long career. But I think he can be a really, really efficient and effective release valve
Kind of blends some of that bully ball with the really quick release off the catch, especially from the corners. So, can't say enough good things about Tobias these days. He's just playing like a really high level starter. Obviously the money he's making has him in the same realm as, you know, all NBA guys and stars. But I think at this point, like, I try to ignore that just because it's not necessarily his fault that the Sixers are willing to give him all that money. And so, and he hasn't, you know, it just isn't approximating the impact of those guys, but he's playing really good ball for a team that is ascending the Eastern Conference. And, he just deserves a lot of credit. And it's not just that he's adapted, it's that he's adapted and playing the role well. So, big fan of what we've seen from Tobias most of the year, and especially the last month, 5 weeks, and even more so the last two games, where he's just been, I wrote it in my bell ringer piece at Liberty Ballers, but I think he's scored 38 points on 18 shots the last two games, which amounts to about 94% true shooting, which is quite good. I know it's a small sample, of course, but if we're just talking about the last couple of games, that's all we can analyze. So big kudos to Tobias.
Yeah, and we'll jump into some of this sample size that you're talking about, Jackson, a little bit later on in the podcast, because I do want to jump into that. I mean, the last six games is 20% of their season. It's a fifth, so we're not looking at a six game out of 70. It's 6 out of 30. So looking at Tobias Harris, we're hopeful that he's able to continue doing what he's doing, like you mentioned, with his efficiency in shooting the rock. He's shooting 44.8% over the last six wins. Another guy I want to talk about too, and kind of focus in on, is James Harden. Right, you look back at that loss, the ugly one, where he came back to the lineup after missing those games, and made some critical errors in that loss to Houston, and again, a pretty crappy Rockets team. But you're going to have some of those in an 82 game season. But we've seen him now also start to find his footing. Right, he's at 20.7 points, 11.3 assists over the win streak. I was noticing this too, watching him the last couple of games. Like today, there was a couple of times where, after Montrezl Harrell came into the game for Joel, he was running a two-man game with Harden, and Harden was able to either make it just a hard pass look easy, I would say, and then also at the same time, able to get his way to the rim. He missed a couple of those shots, hit a couple of them as well. But when you look at his game and where he's at right now, and the latest updates we get on Max, he's still a little ways away, not looking at months, maybe weeks yet, but again, not... his return isn't imminent, although we had heard a couple of weeks ago we were likely looking at Christmas. When you look at Harden and just the way he's transformed his game, because we talked a lot last season about how he's missing his burst, right? And he was coming off the hamstring injury and dealing with that for the better part of the season and towards the end of the 2021 playoffs. And we were like, okay, is he going to be the same guy? I think we clearly see he's lost a step, and that's not like saying, oh my God, he's terrible now. But he looks like he's figured things out in terms of, from a mental standpoint, always been very smart with the ball, always been savvy with, you know, what to do and when to do it. But I'm watching him right now, not necessarily using his athleticism, but his smart to be able to separate himself from defenders. When you look at James Harden, what's his ceiling, do you think, for the Sixers? Like, are you looking at, he's an all-star for sure? Do you think he can make an all-NBA team? Like, what do you think his ceiling is individually, if he's able to stay healthy, obviously, number one, and play really towards the way he has throughout most of this regular season?
Yeah, one thing I will say about Maxey is Woj has now reported that he's still targeting Christmas Day as his return twice. He's reported it before the Lakers game and before the Warriors game. Unfortunately, there's no Sixers ESPN game this Friday to get another update on that. But, you know, we haven't heard any updates. I know Doc said one thing, but just it does seem like he could be back by Sunday. Who knows? But anyhow, with Harden, tonight was an interesting game for Harden. I think as Sixers fans and people who cover the Sixers, we've seen this game quite a bit from him during his Sixers tenure, that, you know, he has a really strong stint, whether it's the first quarter, the second quarter, the third or the fourth, and then kind of dissipates in terms of his scoring. I think he was still good overall, but, you know, at 12 points in the first quarter, 5-8 shooting, 1 of 6 the rest of the way, only 3 points. I didn't worry a ton about it because it felt like he was pretty content to let Tobias do stuff, let Joel do stuff as a passer, let Niang fire up. There's no Niang, only, you know, went 3 of 11, but, I thought the passivity was an issue on Monday against the Raptors. I didn't think it was much of an issue in this one against the Pistons because their defense looked really good and their offense was excellent against, you know, one of the worst defenses in the league. But it kind of dates back to what, you know, you and I have talked about, you know, the last 6 months, honestly, at this point. Is how much of a scoring load can he carry when Joel can't do it all? And I don't know if we've answered that. I think if he continues to play like he has on the whole this year, he He's probably an all-star. I think it's going to be tough just because he missed 14 games. That puts you, you know, you're just fighting an uphill battle. I think I did the math. He can probably, he'll probably have played about 70% of the games by the time reserves are announced in early to mid February, you know, assuming he plays all of these games moving forward over the next 6 or so weeks. But yeah, I think, you know, right now he's kind of in that, like the way he plays on a game to game basis, I think is an all-star. And you have flashes of kind of a top 10 to 12 player that's clearly an all-NBA guy. But right now I'd more have him as a, you know, on a game-to-game basis, more of a fringe all-NBA player, whereas last year I thought more of he was just a all-star without kind of the all-NBA candidacy on a per-game basis. So I think he's better than last year. The passing's been incredible. But you still just have those times where he's passive in games that he shouldn't be passive. I don't think Wednesday was one of them that he could afford to be passive against a really bad team like the Pistons. But like I said, Monday was a game where I thought he should have been a little more aggressive, and he just kind of seems to go as his jumper goes, you know, 2 of 7 tonight from three. Some of his bigger games the last couple of years have been because he's been so good from three. And I talked about like him this offseason, him needing to be better in those games when the three isn't falling. So kind of curious to monitor that moving forward as we, you know, we get close to the playoffs and whatnot. But on the whole, since he's come back, you know, aside from that one loss to the Rockets, I think he's been quite good. Last couple games haven't been as good, but the passing is so good, and just what he opens up for everyone else continues to be really, really impactful. So, and I do think, you know, despite some of his lapses defensively where he's in no man's land on the strong side or he loses a guy around a screen, I've liked his defense more this year with the Sixers than last year. His hands are really impressive and his rebounding, only two tonight, but I think the way he kind of puts a body on guys helps a lot too. So, all in all, I think Harden's been good or quite good, but for the Sixers to go where they want to go, I think he still has to be more consistent to score, and that's something I'm going to continue to monitor as we progress throughout the rest of the regular season.
Yeah, you know what's funny, Jackson, we talked a lot about this too. Like, you know, we obviously Harden's going to be, we expect him to be great, you know, an all-star level player at least. Joel Embiid, we expect him to be one of the, if not the second or third best player on the court in any given game. Tobias Harris has been a pleasant surprise. One guy I want to bring up too, Matisse Thybulle, for all the flack that we've given him during this win streak, he's averaged roughly 15 minutes per night, putting up 6 points a game and shooting 46.2% from deep. When you look at his contributions, I would say, to the team, because we looked at this, you know, throughout his struggles last year and in the playoffs, obviously going through the COVID thing, not being able to play in Toronto, struggled mightily against Miami, fell out of the rotation, we felt like, once they got Melton, once they got House, once they got Tucker. But given the fact that the team had its ups and downs, Doc Rivers decided to go with getting Matisse back. When you look at him, are you pleasantly surprised by the fact that he's been able to kind of carve himself out a little bit of a role on this team? What do you expect from Matisse going forward now?
Yeah, I would say on the aggregate of the season, he still hasn't been, you know, good versus, or I guess like, I think he's been okay, but, you know, still shooting 30% from three, 40% from the field. But I thought, you know, just in terms of Wednesday, he was good. You know, I included him as one of my bell ringers. That stint he had from kind of late first quarter to early second quarter was really impactful. It was part of the reason they were able to win with, you know, those bench heavy units out there around Harden and Embiid. So, you know, had a couple of those. I think my coworker, my peer Josh Grieb kind of called it the TJ McConnell-esque steals where you lurk in the backcourt and the defense isn't expecting. Had a couple of those, an impressive finish, a good lob to Harrell. Yeah. I think, I don't know if it was Kate or if it was Ola, but one of them remarked that like usually Matisse is the one catching those lobs, and he was impressed to show some nice touch on that delivery to Harrell. So yeah, I thought he was solid, and you know, I'm curious to kind of see if we can get more of this, right? Can he finish those buckets around the rim, you know, as a cutter? Joel had a really nice pass to him that he converted. Can the playmaking, can the defensive playmaking not, or can it outweigh some of those gambles and when he's poorly positioned, stuff like that. So I think something that Matisse does deserve credit for is like his minutes aren't consistent on a night-to-night basis. You know, you look 7 minutes in an overtime win against the Raptors Monday versus 13 in a blowout win against the Pistons. So like the fact that he's able to kind of always stay ready, I think is something that's hard for certain rotation players, not singling on the Sixers, just as a general NBA rotation player, that can be tough. So he does deserve credit for that he can kind of just come up off the bench cold and sometimes give you a kind of a game-changing stint. And I thought, you know, he really gave them some good minutes against the Pistons. So, you know, for his sake, I, you know, the goal should be to sustain that. I don't know it necessarily kind of what to expect every night, but neither does he, which make it tough. But I do think he does a good job of, you know, at least bringing it kind of, even though he doesn't necessarily know when his minutes or how his minutes are going to come. So going to continue to be monitoring him. And, you know, anyone's listened to Read My Work for a while knows I'm pretty critical of him and kind of my skepticism about him.
Are you Jackson? Really? Player,
but,
really?
but he was good against the Pistons, and I thought he gave them a nice lift, you know, along with some other bench guys. So I will give him his flowers when he plays like he deserves them, and he did in this one. So kudos to Matisse.
Yeah, and you know, to your point, Jackson, we touched on Harden and obviously Embiid. We just look at and just think, well, yeah, the guy should be great. I haven't even mentioned him, averaging 34.3 points during the 6-game win streak. Obviously, they won all 6 of their 7-game homestand. Some big picture stuff to look at as well. I wanted to jump to some team numbers. I wanted to jump into the standings because we thought the Sixers might be toast in terms of even trying to get up into the top 2 at least. That doesn't look like it's too far-fetched at this point. Let's jump into some of that stuff after a short break. All right, we're back. Jackson, you know, we touched on some individuals. We touched on the fact that the Sixers obviously beat a pretty, sorry to say it, a shitty Pistons team. Although, hey, I like their young guys. They'll be able to figure it out eventually as time goes on. Obviously, Detroit was without Cade Cunningham for this one. But looking at the numbers, the underlying numbers for the Sixers, and you mentioned this too earlier on in the podcast, Jackson. Yeah, you know what? They're not really not a huge sample size, 6 games, but it is a fifth of their season to this point. They're 18-12. And you know, I was looking up some of the numbers there in the fourth quarter with things at a hand. Looking at this since December the 8th, and of course, you get the home cooking as well, which does make a difference. But these were issues on the offensive end coming into this homestand where people were wondering, like, damn, what is going on with this team at 12-12? And obviously, you had the injuries. Not easy to win when you're missing your 3 best players for a short period of time, although Joel only missed 4 games, and then you had Harden and Maxey out for longer. But you're looking at this team now since that December 8th, they've basically been 2 weeks. Third in scoring in the league, fourth in shooting, 3-point shooting, third in assists per game, second best net rating. Only team that had them beat out there was the Knicks, whose win streak ended tonight at home against the Raptors. By the way, you see the highlights on that one. Pascal Siakam 52-9-7 at the
52.
Garden.
52. Wow. I saw you 31 at one point. I wasn't able to catch the rest of it because I was doing some post game work. But my goodness, I saw you 31 at one point. So he had 38 against the Sixers, 52. He's on a tear, my goodness.
He's on a tear. And that Raptors team, I think, is a team to look at for the trade deadline too, Jackson. I think they're going to be – because if they can get something good for him and he's putting up these kind of numbers, I think Masai Ujiri will be able to get something because that Raptors team is kind of stuck in the middle of no man's land. But, again, we'll save that topic for later on. But focusing back on the Sixers, like, you're looking at those offensive numbers, what do you attribute that to, right? Because I'll sit here and say it too. I'm critical of Doc Rivers every chance that I get. I feel like I've seen enough from him to have an opinion that I don't know if he's the right guy to lead this team to a championship. And I'm concerned covering the squad that some of the red flags that you see in him are going to rear their head again come time for the postseason. But for now, I'll give him credit, right? He's been able to find a good balance with this team. You look at this win streak right now. Have they beat any world beaters? Not particularly, but they're beating the teams that they're supposed to, something we couldn't say when they ended up losing to Houston. But you got wins against the Lakers. You got wins against Charlotte. Sacramento has been a good story, a feel-good story. Obviously, the Warriors were extremely shorthanded, but Toronto and Detroit, those are the wins have come against. But when you look at offensively, do you think Doc's implemented anything differently from what you're seeing over the last 6 games? Or has it just been par the course and the guys are executing the game plan just a lot better right now?
Yeah, I think what they've done well, I don't know if this is necessarily the case. I checked it before the last 2 games they played, but they had been pushing the pace a lot more as of late, hit ahead passes with Harden, getting into their sets quicker, which I think is smart because they're not the most creative offense. So if they at least get into their looks quicker, then they have more time to kind of improvise and whatnot. So that's been good. Harden's at least led that, but I'm sure it's somewhat of an emphasis from the coaching staff. One thing that they do shrewdly is out during free throws, they'll often place Embiid on the left block there to kind of have a leak out pass. The Sixers are kind of consistently over the last, I think ever since Doc took over 3 years ago, kind of consistently used that tactic and it's worked well. So, you know, they deserve credit for that, but, schematically, no, nothing really stands out. It's just the pace. I think, Harden and Shake have really nice chemistry and some of those hit ahead passes, letting Shake attack from the wings 1-on-1 has helped too. So, yeah, I think, you know, with this offensive surge, it is worth noting they haven't played a lot of good defenses. I think maybe I would have to check, but I want to say the best defense they've played at least kind of in terms of how they were performing at that moment, was probably the Kings. And I think the Kings are at best like league average right now in defensive rating. So could be off on that if anyone's, you know, more in tune with defensive ratings as of late than I am listening to this podcast. But point being, I think I've been more impressed with the defense during this win streak, and a lot more impressed, I would say. So I think, you know, just kind of given who these play callers are, it feels like it's going to rely on a lot on Harden and Maxey, Tobias and Embiid to be really good scorers and shot makers in their different roles. And that's okay, because I do think the defense is really good. I do think the coaching staff does a good job of throwing different looks out there, throwing zone out. Sometimes they'll play drop with Embiid. Sometimes they'll trap with him. Sometimes they'll switch. Sometimes they won't. So I do, for all of kind of the nitpicking I do and criticism I give about the offensive scheme, I do think they're pretty creative and varied defensively. So that's what stood out to me during this winter and kind of throughout the entire year. But yeah, nothing's, you know, besides the pace, really nothing stood out in terms of X's and O's. It's just a lot of Joel Embiid and Tobias and Harden being a lot better than these porous defenses for the most part.
Well, you're looking at that, and I looked it up while you were saying that, Jackson. Sacramento second second last in terms of giving up points per game. But overall, the Lakers are actually defensive rating wise, they're in the top 15. None of those other teams, like you mentioned, and I said none of those other teams really in the thick of the playoff spot. So again, it could be a little bit attributed to the fact that you're playing lesser opponents. Could also be attributed to the fact that, yeah, okay, like you mentioned, your stars or your big guns are playing a little bit better. And you touched on there while you're answering that question, Jackson, about the defensive side of things, right? And how creative they have been, and we all expected them to be very good defensively. When you look at the fact that you have a Joel Embiid on the roster, you got PJ Tucker in, you acquired D'Anthony Melton, you got Daniel House, you got Matisse Thybulle, who we know is another guy who's pretty damn good as an on-ball defender and as a team defender. But you look at the numbers now also over the win streak, right? You're the defensively second best defensive net rating in the league, and that's over the last six games. You're looking at that scoring wise, the Sixers have been great at that as well. If you're again looking at the numbers there, second in opponents' field goal percentage, still the top team in terms of giving up the lowest 3-point percentage to your opponents. And now overall for the season, the Sixers second best defensive rating as well. So things are really aligning on that end. When you look at this right now and you look at the fact that the Sixers have been able to really stifle most of their opponents, and looking at this, especially this over six game win streak, you're looking at, yeah, you haven't beaten world beaters, but okay, that Lakers game, that fourth quarter, end of that fourth quarter was terrible, giving up that 18-point lead and almost losing to a Lakers squad that likely isn't going to be in the play-in spot. And then we've seen them, you know, handle Charlotte, handle Sacramento. Golden State did give a little bit of a scare. The Raptors have been struggling, but we know they're talented as well. Ended up winning that win, getting that win in OT. And then here tonight, recording this on a Wednesday, they smacked the Pistons around and win by 20. When you look at the defensive side of things, and again, I know we're early on, and I'm not asking you to procrastinate this or give us a thing that looking at, hey, this is what they're going to be at come time for April, May, and June when the games really count. But when you look at where they're at right now, does this have the makings of a championship defense to you, Jackson?
I think the defense can be there for sure. You know, they're third in the league in defensive rating overall. So even if they've been, you know, boosted by some not great opponents and some injuries over this winning streak, like we have a 30-game sample of them being really good. So I trust them on that. And again, it just, to me, it just comes down to the offense. Like, can they play at a top eight level the rest of the year in conjunction with a top three or four defense? If they can, you should feel pretty good about kind of, and obviously the process matters too, but you should feel decent about kind of their playoff prospects. If they're more of a top 10 to 12 offense with Harden coming in and out, with Tobias maybe cooling down at times and whatnot, some of these hot and cold games from Melton, then I would be a little more, you know, worried. I think they're probably going to be close to that 10 to 12 range. Just because I just think there are some teams around the league that are, you know, in a higher class than them. But I think the defense is absolutely, you know, about as good as you can have. Even if Embiid, you know, at times his motor can run cold, just his sheer presence as a deterrent is incredible. I know Tucker can be frustrating, but I thought he was incredible on defense on Wednesday. You know, but Bojan Bogdanović only had three shots. I know he took 9 free throws, but a lot of that limited shooting volume was because Tucker was denying a lot of what they want to do with him off the ball, getting him around these wide pin downs and stuff off the ball screens. So, you know, Melton, we know what he can do as a playmaker, especially off the ball. I think Tobias has been pretty solid. So I think, like I mentioned, Harden's been pretty good as a playmaker, even if he's possession by possession consistency isn't always there. So I like this defense a lot. For me, it just comes down to kind of where they level out as a playoff offense. And to me, it's probably not, well, at least right now, where it should be in terms of championship hopes. But that's the beauty of the regular season. They have 4 months to get there. I don't know if they will or if they can, but they're certainly afforded the leeway to try and get there in the next 4 months.
Jackson, looking now at the big picture stuff, right? As I mentioned, you got six straight wins, taking care of business against teams. And when we talked about this, not on the last podcast we did last week, but the one before then, we kind of looked at the schedule and said they're going to have some softballs here, and they got to take advantage of that to pad their record and move up the Eastern Conference standings. Got a tough one coming up on Friday to close out the seven-game homestand against the Clippers. Kawhi Leonard been pretty damn good, although L.A. will be coming off a game they play, I believe, tonight, and then they have to take on basically a cross-country trip and take on the Sixers on like less than 2 days there, so might be able to take advantage of a tired Clippers team. You obviously have that Christmas Day game against the Knicks team, whose eight-game win streak just got snapped. Then you got Washington, New Orleans, who's been a pleasant, you know, cute surprise in the Western Conference, maybe falling back to earth a little bit now, losing four in a row at the time of this recording, and you know, you could take advantage of these games, right? Because you look at where the Sixers are going to be after that. Then you got OKC, you got New Orleans again, then you got Indiana, Chicago, back-to-back against Detroit, OKC, Utah, the Lakers on Sunday the 15th. So, I mean, looking at this right now, the Clippers obviously are going to be the toughest, I think, of that stretch, that 13-game stretch. But looking at where the Sixers can be, 18-12, you got these 13 games coming up, going to be at the 43-game mark at that point, only 3.5 right now behind Milwaukee for the top spot in the Eastern Conference. The Celtics have fallen back to earth as well. Boston's lost three in a row. Milwaukee now at 22-9. Again, asking you to look in the future, which is tough to do, but is that top seed in play for this Sixers squad? Because as much as you look at it and say the regular season doesn't matter, and I've said that before too, this team will be judged by how it does in the playoffs. You definitely want to be there because a game seven is going to be played at home. You're going to be playing a lesser opponent in round one. All these things do matter, and you look at that, you avoid a Boston or Milwaukee if you're able to get the top spot in the second round, likely if those teams finish 2-3. So when you look at how Philly is playing, and we know, like you said, Maxey, varying times of what we're hearing when he's going to be back, but if they can figure this all out, is it important for them to get the number one seed, and do you think they're good enough to be able to do that come time for April?
Well, first thing I would say, I think that game at New Orleans on the 30th is probably their hardest of this stretch. I know Pelicans struggle a little bit, but you know, Ingram's been out, I think, for about a month now. So yeah, I think that one will be really fun and really tough. But yeah, I think, you know, I think they can get the one seed, but I also don't think it matters. You know, we've seen this general iteration, this at least an Embiid-led Sixers get the one seed, and it didn't matter. They had home court in game seven 2 years ago against the Hawks, and they still lost. So I think they can get there. I think right now there's kind of a, basically kind of what I've watched throughout this year. I know the Knicks are playing well, but to me, they're kind of a top five in the East, you know, with the Bucks, the Celtics, the Cavs, the Nets, the Sixers. I don't think they're all in the same tier, but I think those are kind of a step above anyone else right now. Doesn't mean things can't change, some trade, some improved play and some refined, you know, approach, you know, schematically. So that could change between that right now. That's the top five. So yeah, I think though your general kind of point there that it's always nicer to have a game seven at home or have, you know, a little easier time in the first round so you can rest or you can kind of, you know, give yourself a little more leeway. It is good to have, but I don't think it matters. Like, I just think like they got to figure it out. They got to be a good enough offense. Doc has to make enough in-game adjustments and game-to-game adjustments. Harden has to be aggressive enough and consistent enough as a scorer. Can Embiid stay healthy? What can we see from Tobias on both ends? So, and granted, Tobias was quite good on both ends, I thought, for most of the last playoff run. So I don't want to necessarily, you know, say he's not, you know, there, but yeah, I just think there are a lot of questions to answer to this team that I don't think we can determine until the springtime. So there are indicators to look for, and that's kind of why, you know, part of why I do this job. But yeah, I don't know how much, you know, we're going to get about this team because it is just going to be some of those overlying questions that we don't know. But I do think, like I said, monitoring kind of how this offense can flow when their big four is all healthy, monitoring what Harden can do when he really puts his pedal to the metal, you know, as a scorer, you know, consistently, you know, what that looks like are the big things. But yeah, I'm excited for this stretch. You know, a lot of these games, as we mentioned, as of late over the 16 win streak have been pretty fortuitous in terms of quality of opponent or injuries, you know, in the case of the Warriors especially. But, you know, the Knicks have been playing well. The Clippers have figured some things out as of late. New Orleans is really good. Oklahoma City on the road on New Year's Eve, I think, could be kind of tough, especially on a back-to-back on the road. New Orleans at home is going to be fun, good. The Pacers have been scrappy. The Bulls can't seem to figure it out in clutch time, but seem to be in a lot of games. So I like this two-week stretch, this two-and-a-half-week stretch. I think you're going to find some things out about the Sixers and kind of learn a little better about where they are when they're playing some pretty good teams. You know, so fingers crossed that everyone for both sides is healthy, and especially fingers crossed that, that Maxey is back soon and kind of back to his full strength self that we're accustomed to. So, yeah, pretty curious about these kind of next 3 or 2 weeks, I would say.
Yeah, it's, and again, we looked at this part of the schedule, and again, hoping Maxey is back will definitely help them and pad that record and get those wins, because you are going to have some tougher stretches coming up in the new year. Let's get out of here on this, Jackson. Looking at the Christmas Day schedule, I'm not going to let you take a easy one here and say Milwaukee and Boston, but what game are you looking forward to the most out of the rest of those, the five games that we get on Christmas Day?
Oh, man, that's a great question. I would have loved to say home Warriors against the Grizzlies, but no, Steph makes that a lot less enticing because the home Warriors are juggernaut, but I don't think the Warriors are any sort of juggernaut at home, even without Steph. I don't know, man. I think obviously Bucks Celtics is the easy choice there. But I'm also, you know, I am pretty curious to watch Sixers Knicks. You know, two teams have been playing really well as of late. The Knicks have figured stuff out, you know, in New York. It'll be fun. You know, it's, I think, kind of big prime time. I don't know, prime time at 9 a.m. or noon on Christmas is prime time. But, you know, ESPN game, Madison Square Garden is fun. Two teams have been playing well, you know, rivals in the Atlantic Division. So I'm excited for that one. But, you know, I really like kind of three of these matchups, you know, 76ers, or Sixers, Knicks, Bucks, Celtics, and Suns Nuggets. Nothing to take away from the other two, but no AD, no Steph, no Desmond Bane most likely, kind of takes a lot of the luster from those other two matchups. Maybe that's nap time and present time for the families. But yeah, really excited for all three of those games that I mentioned. Like I said, Sixers, Knicks, remember the last time they played on Christmas was, I want to say, Simmons' rookie year. Porzingis was still in New York, which feels like a lifetime ago, but that game wasn't super fun. So fingers crossed that that one is fun and Maxey is back by then. And even if he's not, we get a really fun matchup. Two teams, like I said, have been playing well and you're kind of vying for, you know, home court advantage in the East.
Yeah, it'll be fun. And again, I mean, I love the Christmas Day games. It helps that the NFL slate kind of sucks, to be honest, other than maybe Packers, Dolphins. So I think a lot of people will be tuning in. I'm looking forward to seeing the Sixers play on Christmas Day. And then obviously I like that Phoenix-Denver game at nighttime too. Two teams, mm-hmm. not in big markets, not, you know, looked at as these, you know, flashy in terms of a national audience, but two very, very, very good teams. I mean, you look at the fact that they're basically battling it out for the top spot in the West. And I think those will be two of the teams that will have something to say come time for the playoffs as well, as who will come out of the conference as well. Jackson, thanks for joining me on this one. Appreciate you taking the time out as always. I hope you enjoy the holidays. Have a good time. Whatever it is you decide to do, take it easy on the booze though. We need you to be fresh for whenever you go to ride for us at Liberty Ballers. And we'll definitely connect and probably do this again. Likely not next week, but coming up in the new year.
Sounds good. Yeah, I'll talk to you in the new year.
All right, appreciate it. That's Jackson Frank. Obviously, as I mentioned, does a great job writing for us over at Liberty Ballers. That'll do it for this episode of The 30. Like I mentioned off the top, always appreciate a subscription, a five-star review, the Liberty Ballers Podcast Network. You can do that, like I said, wherever you get your fix. As far as the schedule, as we go through the next couple of weeks here, keep an eye out on Thursday. The Gastro Crew will be back, kind of giving you a summarization of what's been on with the Sixers this year. Friday, Sean and Dave will be back with the Talking About Podcast. That'll be post-game for the Sixers-Clippers game, which, again, could be a real good one, depending on what happens there with LA, again, traveling cross-country. And then I'll be back in the hot seat on Sunday, giving you a quick recap of the Knicks and Sixers. So appreciate you all listening to this one. Like I mentioned, always appreciate you all giving us your time, your feedback, everything. We get the reviews that you see on iTunes. Yes, I read them all, even if they're nice or not nice, whatever it is. I just appreciate everybody who takes the time out to listen. So we're hoping to continue to grow our podcast network and get some new stuff going for you guys as well in the new year.